Now back to New York Game Day with Chris Canty, Mike Tannenbaum, and Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN. Congratulations. You found it.
You know what time it is.
This is New York Game Day. It's 3 hours of the most informative and entertaining NFL news in the league. Now here's former NFL defensive lineman Chris Canty, former Jets GM and ESPN insider Mike Tannenbaum, and your host, Anita Marks.
Welcome in. Anita Marks with you, along with Chris Canty and Mike Tannenbaum. And this is New York Game Day with you for the next 3 hours, just like the gentleman said, leading into your Jets pregame show with Dan Grasso. So no reason to go anywhere else today than right here on 98.7 ESPN. Gentlemen, welcome in. Great to see your faces on Zoom. I love that. I know there's a lot of negatives about 2020, but here's a positive about 2020. Our social media and our technology, like, you know, we lifted the game. And it's cool that we're able, the three of us, to be able to do this show in three different locations and be able to see each other. So y'all look great. I'm excited to be with you this morning. First and foremost, I know obviously we're going to be hot and heavy with the Giants and the Jets, but breaking news today, another positive test at the New England Patriots training facility. They were shut down this morning. That game is still scheduled to go on Monday at 5:00 against Denver. But how difficult, And Chris, let's start with you being a former player, you know, and kind of take us in that locker room and on that team to try to prepare for an opponent during the week, not at the facility, having to Zoom. Then you go back on Sunday and then now another positive test, shut down. Now you got to go home. How difficult of a week do you think this is for those Patriots players, Chris?
Well, it's got to be tough, Anita. I mean, players are creatures of habit, and so anything that breaks your routine is going to throw you off. And in terms of the preparation during an NFL week, I mean, you usually have a certain calendar that you follow in terms of the installation of your packages. Like on Wednesdays, it's first and second down, heavy run game, play action. On Thursdays, it's all of the sub-package stuff, and on third downs, and then on Fridays, you have situational football, goal line, red zone, 2 minute. Those are the things that you work on. And so at any point, if you have an interruption based on what's going on in the world with COVID, it's going to affect your preparation. So unfortunately, Anita, you're talking about not feeling as prepared as a player going into a game situation.
Mike?
Yeah, just to build on that, there's some, and you already alluded to it, Anita, in terms of where we are in 2020 with the proliferation of things like Zoom. The day before the game, a lot of the game plans already been put in. And my understanding is they did practice outside yesterday. So yesterday was really like a Friday practice. And today would really be more of like the Saturday walkthrough. So the fact that the facility is shut down today doesn't really shouldn't impact their preparation a lot from a standpoint. It's probably a walkthrough. And then everything else could be done on Zoom. Again, not perfect, but we're living in a world of not perfect right now in 2020. So I think to the extent possible, you can function and prepare within reason. I guess the bigger question for me fundamentally is it just one new test or how many other players, like how pervasive is this situation in New England? So I think the next couple of hours will be consequential in terms of, is it just one more positive test or does one lead to, you know, five or six positives?
Well, what we know right now is no Cam Newton, no Stephon Gilmore, and you could, you know, argue that they're their best two players on each side of the football. Mike, have you heard if they're going to go with Hoyer or Stidham this week? Chris, do you guys know? I've been waiting to hear something, and I haven't. Or have they not made that announcement yet?
My sense of it was they were going to hopefully go with Cam Newton, assuming that he'd be clear by Monday. So I think, you know, Coach Belichick's going to keep his, you know, cards close to the vest, and to the extent he doesn't need to declare anybody, I don't think he would. So my sense is they were hoping it was going to be Cam, but obviously, you know, the situation is very fluid.
Interesting. All right. So again, this week's schedule, you know, because of COVID, very fluid, as we know. You're going to have two Monday night football games, again, set as scheduled as of right now, 5:00, Denver at New England, and then you've got the Chargers at New Orleans, and then, of course, guys, that Bills-Tennessee game now has been scheduled for Tuesday night. So, Again, I try to look at the positives here, guys. I mean, we're getting three straight days and nights of football. You know what I mean? You know, COVID is something serious, obviously, hoping that, you know, whatever players have contracted COVID-19 are going to be fine and healthy. I'm trying to look at the positive here, and we get three straight days of football, right, guys?
Anita, I thought it was interesting that Jason McCourty from the Patriots came out and said that the protocols that are put in place are not necessarily to protect the players, but it's just to make sure that you have enough bodies to get to the games. I think that's something that we have to keep an eye on, because as this thing continues to spread throughout the league and the NFL calendar continues to be affected by it, I'm sure you're going to hear more from players who feel like they're not in the safest of situations. And I think that that has to be a huge concern as to whether or not we're going to be able to finish the season. Like, I know that there's a lot at stake for both sides, but anytime you start hearing NFL players come out and verbalizing or criticizing the protocols that have been put in place, I think that's something that you have to raise an eyebrow at. And I just don't know where the NFL turns, because clearly what they've been doing to some degree has been working, because you're talking about limited personnel being affected. But I just feel like, you know, if you have a pop-up here and a pop-up there, eventually it'll get to the point where, you don't have the flexibility to adjust the calendar, adjust the games, adjust the schedule. I think the NFL has got to take a long, hard look at trying to create some kind of modified bubble in order to insulate their players from what's going on throughout the rest of the country.
Gentlemen, like, just really, really quick, Mike, I'm just curious. I want to hear from both of you. On a scale of 1 to 10, okay, 10 being absolutely stoppage, where do you feel, what do you feel is going to happen this season? Like, do you feel that there's a possible stoppage? So then you would give that, you'd rate that like a 5 or a 6. Do you feel that there will absolutely be a stoppage, especially as the winter rolls around? And apparently COVID cases are supposed to, you know, they're already on the rise. They're supposed to rise even further as we get into November and December. You know, Mike, let's start with you. What's your gut feeling in regard to, do you feel there will be a stoppage in the NFL?
I think we're going to play, because I think we can always move the Super Bowl back a couple of weeks and pick up a week or two there, especially as it relates to the bye week in the playoffs, or the city of Tampa Bay can host the Super Bowl several weeks into February and March. And, you know, the other thing I would say is I've been fortunate. I'm teaching a class this semester at Columbia University in their master's program on the business and history of the NFL. And, you know, if you go back to the late 60s and early 70s, Monday Night Football was like an afterthought. And it was really something that no network wanted. And obviously it's turned into this billion-dollar, you know, enterprise. And I wonder if we're going to look back at 2020 and say, you know what, like, we can play games on Tuesday and our sport becomes even more popular, and we've kind of fell into some things. And I agree with what Chris said about player safety and player health and wellness. And while that is paramount right now, I just wonder if we'll look back 5 years from now and say, hey, if you play on a Tuesday, you go into a bye week, but instead of having, you know, 3 nights of football, Thursday, Sunday, and Monday, we get a fourth day. And as bad as 2020 has been, maybe we'll look back in 5 years and say, well, at least we learned something about it, and now we have Tuesday night football.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting concept, Coach, especially when you think about the timing of all this, because the NFL owners are in the middle of negotiation with their media partners in terms of the rights deal. So maybe that becomes a fold-in or a new wrinkle that we haven't seen in NFL properties in the past. Maybe they do decide to have more weekday football. But it's clear that NFL is king in this country, and fans can't get enough. When everybody else across sports, where their ratings are down, the NFL has continued to thrive. So I think that's one of the things that the NFL is seeing, the power of their brand in a whole new light, given where we're at as a country. And you just try to find ways to improve upon it. But again, I think the one thing that they've got to be conscious of is how the players feel about the protocols and the logistics of playing the season in the middle of a pandemic. Because, again, we're only talking about one player coming out and feeling like, you know, the measures that have been taken aren't necessarily for their benefit or their health and well-being. But if you start hearing more players come out and talk about it, Anita, I think it sets up for the NFL to have to make an interesting decision in terms of how they move forward.
It's definitely an interesting year, that's for sure. Again, if you're just tuning in, New York Game Day, New England Patriots facility shut down today with another positive COVID test, but the game on Monday night at 5 o'clock is still scheduled to happen. All right, guys, let's turn our attention to what's going on in our own backyard. And let's start with the Jets. They lose. Here's the thing. I mean, if I was on Daily Wager this week, and one of the topics was, will either the Giants or the Jets go 0-16? And by the way, you can get that bet for 15-1. And we were asked, if you were to put money down on that bet, which team would you put it on? And I said the Jets. If ever there was a game that they should have won, was against an injury-riddled Denver team coming in and continued to suffer more injuries as the game progressed. And they came in with a third-string quarterback. It's just, and then now Sam Darnold's out because of the shoulder issue. I know we're going to sit here and break down this Cardinals game, but guys, do you think the Jets win one game this season?
Well, it's pretty hard to go winless, Anita. I mean, the last couple of teams to do it, you had the 2017 Browns and the 2008 Lions. So, I mean, that just shows you it's not it's not an easy thing to do. But if you look at the Jets' schedule, I mean, there aren't a whole lot of softballs in there. And, you know, certainly you'd look at today one of the more winnable games. It's just that I think they're catching this Arizona Cardinals team at a bad time, because coming off of a disappointing effort on the road in Carolina last week, you got to think that a team that has playoff aspirations is going to come in MetLife Stadium highly motivated. And I think from a matchup standpoint, the Arizona Cardinals do some things that can exploit some of the weaknesses of the Jets. And you look at their offense, they want to spread it out. They're going to open up the set. It's going to look like basketball on grass. They rely on using spacing to create opportunities for their playmakers. And I just think that in terms of how the Jets play on that side of the ball, I don't necessarily like that matchup. And in the fact that they implement no huddle with their opened up sets and in that RPO style offense, I just think that this is going to be a tough matchup for the Jets.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is a tough one, especially just I don't see where the Jets are going to get their points. You know, that to me is, and we've talked about this quite a bit, they don't have a lot of depth at the skill players. You know, if no Perryman, you know, where are they going to be able to generate sustainability on offense? I think Jeff Smith's been a pleasant surprise. I think it's just going to take Joe Flacco some time to work himself into the game. And if you can't pressure Kyle Murray, the Arizona Cardinal offense is really explosive. And, you know, Anita, you called it when Arizona was playing Washington, which is, if you don't know this guy and play him a lot, he's really hard to defend. So I think this is a tough matchup, but I do think the Jets win a couple of games. Hopefully they get Becton and Darnold back. Le'Veon Bell comes back into game form. So I agree with Chris. I think losing every game is really hard to do in the league right now.
I looked at the schedule, guys. I'll be honest with you. The only game that I can see them winning is week 12 against the Miami Dolphins. And I'm assuming at that point, Tua will be the starting quarterback. Rookie coming in. I think it's a really sad state of affairs. But, you know, Chris, I'm with you. I think the Jets do catch this Cardinals team at a really bad time. Keep in mind, this is the first team that the Jets defense is facing with this type of explosive passing game and DeAndre Hopkins. Christian Kirk is going to be healthy. Like, I just see a ton of points being scored in the secondary today. What do you see in that matchup, Chris?
Well, here's the thing. The Cardinals run an RPO-style offense. Matter of fact, they have run more RPOs in the NFL than any other team. They've got more attempts, and they've got more yards. And they use a no-huddle, up-tempo offense. That means if you're the Jets, you've got to find a way to create negative plays, incompletions, tackles for loss, sacks. That's what you have to do. If you don't, then this offense is going to continue to run at a fast tempo, and it's going to standardize your defense, which is going to make the picture clearer for a young quarterback in Kyler Murray, who is giving defenses all kinds of trouble. I mean, this guy, he's quicker than fast, but, I mean, in the open field, he's a tough guy to tackle one-on-one. I mean, he made Jeff Okuda look silly on the goal line a couple of weeks ago in an open field tackle situation. So I worry about the Jets defense being exploited, because again, this Cardinals offense is going to make you defend every blade of grass, not just vertically, but also horizontally. They're going to use the entire width of the field. So that's the part that I struggle with in terms of finding a way that Greg Williams and his defense can match up against what this Cardinals offense wants to do.
Mike, yeah. Joe Flacco is starting today. You know, there's one thing about Joe at this stage in his career, and that is he's not as mobile. And so the offensive line is really going to have to step up in a big way. What are your realistic expectations for Joe Flacco today against Arizona?
Well, I agree with everything that Chris just said, which is I think Arizona put so much pressure on you. Everything Chris said, that was an excellent breakdown. So if I'm Adam Gase and I'm sitting there with my coordinators, and one of the most enjoyable parts of the job for me over the 20 years was sitting in on Friday and Saturday night meetings and hearing coaches talk about complementary game plans and how are we going to win this week. And I think this week for the Jets, what they have to do is say, we need the ball 35, 36, 37 minutes. Like, that to me is how they win the game. Now, Le'Veon Bell's conditioning, how much does he play? But if they could run the ball and run the ball consistently, that gives them the best chance to win, because I think on the other side of the ball, they're going to give up 30, 35 points. I don't know if you guys saw any of the Ole Miss-Alabama game last night, but for a while there, neither team could stop each other. And to me, if I was Ole Miss, well, I'm scoring. They were almost scoring too fast because they had no hope at slowing down that Alabama offense. So I think this is a game where you want to take the pressure off of Joe Flacco. If Le'Veon Bell is going to play, how many touches can he get? And that, to me, you're killing two birds with one stone. You're minimizing Flacco's rust, and you're keeping Kyle Murray and that explosive and really hard-to-defend Cardinal offense on the bench.
All right, gentlemen, we come back. I do want to dive into what's going on with the Giants, and one of the biggest topics right now is that there's a chance that either the Giants or the Jets could get the number one pick in this year's NFL draft. And if that's the case, I'll say it's a difficult decision. It's a difficult, especially if you watched the game last night, University of Miami at Clemson. Trevor Lawrence, he's available. How sold, how committed are both these organizations to their quarterbacks right now in Daniel Jones and Sam Darnold? We'll dive into that next. Anita Marks, Chris Canty, and Mike Tannenbaum here on New York Game Day, 98.7 ESPN.
Now back to New York Game Day with Chris Canty, Mike Tannenbaum, and Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN. From you.
On 98.7 ESPN, it is New York Game Day. Chris Canty and Mike Tannenbaum, and of course, you. We're going to get to your calls in just a hot second. Gentlemen, in regard to the NFC East, the Eagles are taking on the Steelers. Listen, Sal Palantonio is telling us on Daily Wager today, he thinks the Eagles keep this close. I don't see it. I don't know how, but Sal is buying into the Eagles today. You've got Washington taking on the Rams. They've benched Dwayne Haskins. Kyle Allen is getting the start there. And of course, we've got the Giants taking on the Dallas Cowboys. Right now, the Eagles are at the top of this division because they kissed their sister. They got a tie. Unbelievable. How do you see these two games playing out today, guys?
Well, I mean, I'll start with the Eagles-Steelers game, the matchup in the Keystone State. I don't know what Sal Powell is looking at. He must be drinking the green Kool-Aid down there in Philly. But I just don't see how the Eagles offense gets going up against one of the better, if not the best, defense in the National Football League with the Pittsburgh Steelers. I mean, I don't know how they're going to block that front. The Pittsburgh Steelers are blitzing 54% of the time, which is not only tops in the NFL this year, but it will be tops over the last 15 years. And so with a lot of moving parts along that offensive line, you know, you got three starters out. I'm not sure exactly how that Steelers offense holds up under the pressure that T.J. Watt, Bud Dupree, and that Steelers defense is capable of creating.
Yeah, there's one interesting name to keep an eye on. One of my favorite players, I just remember when he came out, Jordan Mulata. He did not play college. He was a seventh-round pick in 2018 by Philadelphia.
He's a rugby player, right, Coach?
Yes, he is. He absolutely is from Australia. And he's not been bad. You know, I'm not saying he's Jason Peters. I'm not saying he's Andre Dillard, but those are the stories I love. That's what makes pro football to me so fun and interesting is, can Jordan Mulata be the left tackle of the future for the Philadelphia Eagles? I think on paper, you're right, this is a tough matchup. I want to see Carson Wentz's body language change. I want to see him just take over the game. You know, last week he made the one throw in the game that separated him and C.J. Beathard and Mullins from San Francisco. It was game was choppy. It was a little ugly. But he made a throw to a backup receiver in Fulgham, and he won the game. And I just want to see Carson Wentz say, you know what, like, I'm better than Ben Roethlisberger, and watch this.
Mr. T, you know the one thing that bothers me about Carson Wentz, and it looks like it when he's playing in the game, but when you hear other NFL analysts say the same thing, it just looks like he's not seeing the game well. He's not trusting what he's seeing from opposing defenses, and it's creating that little bit of hesitation in his game. And you know, if you hesitate in the NFL, it's the difference between a big play or a turnover for your offense. So I don't know that Carson Wentz is seeing the field the way that the Eagles need him to in order to make this offense go. And that's what bothers me, especially going up against a defense like the Steelers that can be as multiple as they're capable of, with a lot of moving pieces. They always disguise. They're willing to blitz from any level of the defense. I don't know how Carson Wentz is going to fare going up against this group. And then when you look at the other side of the ball, the Steelers are a much more capable offense than the 49ers with C.J. Beathard or Nick Mullins. So I don't know that Wentz will have the same margin for error in this game that he had last week. So that's why I look at the Steelers and laying a touchdown. I just feel like the Steelers will win this one comfortably, especially considering them coming off of a bye week with extra time to prepare.
Yeah, and we don't need to spend a lot of time. We don't need to spend a lot of time talking about Washington, right? I mean, the Rams are just going to take them to the woodshed. We're all in agreement there, right?
Yeah, we're in agreement on that one, Anita. I just think it's interesting that Ron Rivera made the decision to supplant Dwayne Haskins on the depth chart. I mean, he doesn't move to the backup position. He moves to third string. I mean, that means he's running the scout team in practice. And this is a guy that needs every single rep because he's still trying to develop. He only had one full year as a starter at Ohio State, and then last year he didn't start until the end of the season. He's got 11 total starts under his belt. That's not enough in order for him to develop, but also for the organization to evaluate him. Think about this for context: Josh Rosen had more starts in Arizona before they shipped him out before his second year than Dwayne Haskins has had. So I just don't understand the logic behind the decision-making process. Maybe they're trying to send a message to the kid in terms of how he prepares and his overall professionalism. But I don't like the idea of burying a developmental player on the depth chart, because you did invest a first-round pick in him. You want to at least know what you have at the end of this year.
You know what's interesting about that, and I think this has been a little bit of an underreported story, is this. I think we all could agree that Coach Rivera is one of these beyond reproach guys, which is I think we all do. Yeah, I think we love him. We respect him. And if you cobble together his statements the last 2 to 3 weeks, something is pretty apparent to me. 2 weeks ago, he comes out and goes, you know, Dwayne Haskins could turn the ball over. I'm okay with that because Cam Newton did that. We grew with Cam, and it was a great investment. 10 days later, he benches Dwayne Haskins and makes him the third-string quarterback. And communication isn't what's said. Communication is what is heard. Here's what I heard. Cam Newton was young. He turned the ball over, but he worked his ass off, and he was a really young, ascending player, and football was really important to him. When they benched Haskins and made him the third string, and I put that action together with what was said 10 days earlier, I bet you there's a disappointment there as it relates to his work ethic, because if there's bumps in the road, Coach Rivera already told us we're going to live with it. But the fact that they made him third string tells me that something else isn't right there, and maybe this is the best thing that ever happened to Dwayne Haskins, and now he becomes a Cam Newton type where he's the first guy in every day. But the fact that he went from 1 to 3 is very noteworthy to me.
Guys, we've got about 2 minutes left in this segment, and I do want to dive into the AFC East. Miami taking on the 49ers. Still no Tua time yet, and I'm a little perplexed by that. As we know, Denver going up against New England, that game is still scheduled to go on Monday at 5 o'clock, and the Bills at Tennessee. Tennessee, again, breaking news that they have another positive test with a staff member. Not sure if that game will take place on Tuesday. But, guys, let's really, really quickly, like I said, we've got less than a minute. But I'm curious, are you guys surprised we haven't seen Tua yet?
No, I'm not surprised. The Miami Dolphins have been competitive in every single game they've played. Now, they only got the result they were looking for and won, and that happened to be that Thursday night game against Jacksonville. But, listen, this team took the Seattle Seahawks to the wire last week. They were right there with the Buffalo Bills in week two. They were right there with the Patriots in week one. I mean, that came down to a fourth down conversion from Cam Newton late in that ball game. So I just, in terms of how the Miami Dolphins are playing, that's exactly what Brian Flores and their general manager, Chris Greer, are looking for. They're trying to create a competitive culture. And so far, this team has been competitive in every single game. And Ryan Fitzpatrick looks like he's having a blast out there playing football. I mean, he doesn't know how long he's going to be the starting quarterback, but he is just soaking up every single moment. And it's clear to me that everybody on that team is responding to his energy. So as far as I'm concerned, just keep this thing rolling. Buy as much time as you can before you put Tua in, because we know he's recovering from that hip injury. But I like what I'm seeing from the Miami Dolphins. I really, really do.
Yeah, I have the same answer for slightly different reasons. We got to understand something. We're going into week five. We just finished the preseason. So if I'm, you know, the Chargers with Justin Herbert, he had to go out there for, you know, totally different reasons. But if I'm the Miami Dolphins, I made the decisions for the next 10 years, not for the next 10 minutes. And we just got through the preseason. So what is the rush? I agree with Chris. You know, Ryan Fitzpatrick is one of these energetic guys that is easy to like and rally behind. And look, he's not perfect. He's turned the ball over probably more than they want him to. But why rush Tua until you know he knows everything airtight, and we had no offseason, and I think take all the time in the world, you know, for different reasons. Jordan Love, you know, he's the other first-round quarterback. He's not going to be playing because of obviously what Aaron Rodgers is doing. But my point is, these are long-term decisions, and why rush them when if they don't know how to protect themselves or they know all the intricacies of your protections? You know, Chris made a great point about Trevor Lawrence and knowing some of the nuances of that Clemson offense. I just think this is a position that takes time, and you just don't want to rush it.
Mr. T, the other thing that you do is you give that offensive line more time to develop and work together, develop that chemistry, because they've got a lot of young players in that group up front as well. So I just think the more games that you can buy until you got to play Tua, the better in terms of the individual player's development, but also the team around him.
Now back to New York Game Day with Chris Canty, Mike Tannenbaum, and Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Anita Marks, Chris Canty, and Mike Tannenbaum with you for New York Game Day. This is a look inside the numbers brought to you by Coors Seltzer. And gentlemen, some updated news here. Again, if you're just tuning in, earlier today, another player has been tested positive at the New England Patriots practice facility. Therefore, the facility was shut down. And now that game has been moved to next Sunday. So the Patriots were on a bye in week six while the Broncos were supposed to play Miami. The Dolphins-Bronco game is being rescheduled. And the Patriots will play against the Denver Broncos in week six. So keep that in mind. You still have, of course, the Chargers and the Saints on Monday night. And as of right now, the Bills and the Tennessee Titans is still set for Tuesday. However, another positive test today for the Tennessee Titans and somebody on their staff. So not sure what's going to happen in that game. As of right now, that is still scheduled to be played on Tuesday. Gentlemen, your thoughts. I mean, again, everything is so fluid. It has to be because of the fact that, you know, the NFL is playing in a pandemic. But Chris, let's start with you. You know, your thoughts on so much movement and how you think this is going to affect the players and the teams.
Well, I think for the Patriots, this is, if it was ever going to happen to your team, this would be the right time, right? Because they do have the week six bye. But I wonder what happens to the Denver Broncos in their schedule, because their bye is not supposed to be until week eight. So there's a lot of moving parts with this one, and just, you know, in terms of the logistics of it and the NFL trying to fit all of these games in, you just wonder if they're going to be able to make it all work and end the season when they're expecting it to end. I don't see that necessarily happening. And even beyond the scheduling part of it, the biggest concern is slowing the transmission of COVID-19 throughout this league. Because now we're talking about multiple organizations having to close their facilities. The NFL has got to find a way to be able to put a lid on this thing. They absolutely do. They've got to make sure that the players, the coaches, all the staff involved have confidence in the protocols that are in place. And then they've got to find a way to contain it. as to not jeopardize the integrity of the schedule. So I just, from my standpoint, from my vantage point, I just feel like the NFL has got to consider an alternative to what they have been doing, because what they've been doing feels like it's not working.
Yeah, and I see that slightly different, because I feel like it has been working when we look at the bigger picture of, again, we've played 25% of the season, and we're looking at just a handful of games that aren't. Like, we're really, and we should be, emphasizing what's not going well, but we've seen a lot of meaningful games, a lot of competitive games. We're seeing a meaningful NFL season. And I think ultimately what we're going to see is the Super Bowl move back a couple of weeks, and we'll have, you know, some staggered games at the end to make sure that everyone plays 16 games. And that's not perfect, but we're not living in a perfect world. And that's what's going to happen this year. And I think we'll look back and we'll crown a champion. And just like in Orlando, they're going to crown a champion, you know, either tonight or, you know, game seven, if the Heat could come back. It wasn't perfect in Orlando. There weren't crowds. It's not the same vibe, but the NBA can look back and say, given what we had to deal with, we got a reasonable solution. And I think that's what we're going to see in the NFL as well.
Well, I guess, Mike, the thing that concerns me is when you start seeing COVID infections and the pattern that we've seen in our society, it's exponential in terms of, you know, how many people are affected by this thing. And so through the first quarter of the season, when you have two teams already have to close their facilities and reschedule games, you wonder what that's going to look like over the next 4 weeks, over the next 8 weeks, as we start to move into flu season. All of the experts and the healthcare professionals say that they anticipate another wave of COVID-19 affecting this country. And we see that the NFL is not immune to what's going on. So I just wonder if the protocols are stringent enough to be able to protect the NFL and to insulate all of the people involved in order to continue to go through with the season.
Yeah, totally fair. Totally fair points. And I think it's going to be a work in progress. The feedback you hear from Orlando and the NBA was it really took a toll mentally on people not being able to leave. And I think the whole idea of these mini bubbles is easy to say in practice. I just think to go into, you know, a hotel only for 3-4 months is a really heavy lift, especially when you, given the numbers that you're dealing with, you know, when you're dealing with, you know, NFL numbers between roster size and personnel.
Some other big storylines this week in the NFL, and that is Bill O'Brien fired as the head coach of the Houston Texans. Apparently, word was that he got into some type of screaming match with J.J. Watt, and now, you know, the team looking to move forward and do what they need to do to build around a Deshaun Watson that they paid him handsomely this offseason. So Mike, let's start with you. You know, your thought. I don't think there's a surprise here. I was probably more surprised that they didn't let Bill O'Brien go before. You know, I think it's really difficult when you've got a head coach who's also wearing a GM hat. You don't see that often in the NFL, and the decisions that he made in regard to, you know, letting DeAndre Hopkins go to Arizona and bringing in David Johnson. And, you know, I think some of the decisions he made were very questionable. And then, of course, you know, a bad start to the season. So your thoughts on Bill O'Brien being let go, and what does the future look like for you with the Houston Texans?
Yeah, I think this is an example of Bill O'Brien, the GM, got Bill O'Brien, the head coach, fired because they won, what was it, you know, 3 division titles over the last couple of years, and I think they just made some significant mistakes. DeAndre Hopkins, when you trade him, not to maximize his value, if you feel like you can't pay him, I understand that, but don't absorb, you know, David Johnson in a bad contract, or if you trade for Laramie Tunsil, pay him $17 million a year. Don't go pay him $22 or $23 million a year because you forget to do the extension. There was just a lot of mistakes they made not to have a first or a second round pick next year when it could be in the top 5 or top 10. Those are things that just, you know, can't happen. So I think Bill O'Brien, the GM, let Bill O'Brien, the head coach, down. Now, with that said, I think it's a great opportunity because you have a great quarterback. You have a great young quarterback. He's under contract. You have a good left tackle. You have some pieces there. So I think this is going to be a good opportunity for somebody.
Mr. T, I think it's clear that the Texans want a fundamental restructuring of their organization in comparison to what it's been the last couple of years. Now, Jack Easterby steps in. Can you tell us a little bit about him and then the direction that you think the Texans should go in terms of how they're going to rebuild it?
Yeah, so Jack's a guy very interesting. You know, he comes from the player development side of things. He came down from New England with Coach O'Brien, and he was a trusted confidant of Coach O'Brien. He relates well to players, doesn't really have a background in the salary cap or scouting, so I think that's going to be somebody that's going to help with the transition, and I could see them bringing in, you know, a new GM or new team president.
Now, is it a situation where they decide to hire the GM and let that person pick the coach, or will they hire the coach and then allow him to find a general manager that he wants to work alongside?
Yeah, I think it's probably bring in the GM, try to get the institution stabilized, and then work with ownership to bring in the best head coach possible. I think when you're looking for two pieces, that's the way to go, because you want to solidify that long-term piece first.
Some other news that I think potentially could happen, guys. I'm all over Carolina today. Right now, you've got a Carolina, you've got an Atlanta defense. Their secondary is banged up. Julio Jones is going to be a game time decision, and you've got a Carolina team that on both sides of the ball is really, I think a number of us have underestimated. At least I did. You've got Atlanta favored by 2.5. I like Carolina on the money line. I think Carolina wins outright. I guess my question to you is, if that's the case, does the Atlanta Falcons fire Dan Quinn now? What do you anticipate if Carolina wins? What do you anticipate happening there, Mike?
Yeah, I think Atlanta is going to win. So I see this as a bottle of wine opportunity for myself. So I'm really appreciative of the offer. So thank you, Anita.
Okay, hey, well then I'll Billy move on Joel to Chris.
Say,
Chris, do you?
Hey, as Billy Joe would say, bottle of red, bottle of white. You know, I'm whatever you would like to do.
Wow,
interesting, Chris. What you decide here? Well, who do you think is going to win?
I'm with Mike on this one. As much as I love what Matt Rhule is doing down in Carolina, I just think this is the spot where the Falcons get their first win, going up against a division rival. Their offense can score a bunch of points. Even though their defense has been struggling, I just feel like that offense, it's going to be hard to keep pace with what they're capable of doing if they're healthy. And this just feels like the point where they're going to get their first win. I still think Dan Quinn does get clipped at some point during the season, but it's not in week five.
Interesting. Wow. Okay. That's a surprise. I thought you guys would be on the Matt Rhule and Teddy Bridgewater, and especially with Julio Jones being a game time decision. Very, very interesting. Let's talk about the MVP race going on right now, right? Like for the first few weeks of the season, Russell Wilson, just, you know, Mr. Unlimited and having just balling. You got to look at what Aaron Rodgers is doing. You know, I call it making chicken salad out of chicken poop pretty much. I mean, this is a team, an organization that could have had Justin Jefferson, who's turning heads with the Minnesota Vikings. Of course, they went with Jordan Love, their future at the quarterback position for them. But boy, Aaron Rodgers is just making stuff happen. And then there's Josh Allen, who's balling out as well. You got to love the addition of Stephon Diggs and drafting Gabriel Davis, stretching the field, utilizing a lot of play action. Josh Allen, his QB rating is 135 in play action. So I don't think you can sleep on Josh Allen. If you guys had to make a vote right now today on NFL MVP, Chris, let's start with you. Where's your vote going?
Right now it's going to Russell Wilson, just because he has no margin for error. His defense is absolutely awful, and Jamal Adams has been banged up the last couple of weeks, so that doesn't help matters. And so when you look at what that offense for the Seahawks is doing, I mean, he's essentially winning games on his own. And I got to give credit where credit is due. DK Metcalf has come around and developed himself into a true number one wide receiver, somebody that Russ can depend on. But, I mean, this is a little bit of a departure from what we've seen from Pete Carroll offenses, because they typically want to be ground and pound. They're usually in the top five in rushing yards and rushing attempts. Right now, they're 22nd in attempts and they're 17th in yards. And conversely, they're third in passing yards and they're first in passing touchdowns. So this is an offense that's led by throwing the football. That's typically not the case with the Seahawks under Pete Carroll. But I think it's because Russell Wilson is playing at such a high level that they feel like that's something that they can rely on. So to me, it's Russell Wilson. I think he has to be the front runner for the MVP this year.
Interesting. Yeah. Mike?
When we talk about Josh Allen, there's a great axiom that applies here, which is the tape sets the floor and the character sets the ceiling. If you go back to Josh Allen's last 2 years at Wyoming, his completion percentage was 56%. And when he came into Lee, it was at 52 his rookie year, then 58, and now it's spiked to 70. And when he's been able to complete the ball down the field like he has, I give him a lot of credit. I was wrong. I didn't think he could do that. It's rare to see somebody's completion percentage improve the way his has. So he has to be, in my opinion, in the conversation. I do agree with Chris. You pull Russell Wilson out of that Seahawk team right now, and boy, I think they're average at best. Same thing with Aaron Rodgers, although I think Green Bay's defense is better than Seattle's. So for me, I would probably go Wilson, Rodgers, and then Josh Allen. And the thing about Wilson that I think in particular is working well is his ability to get the ball down the field while he's moving in the pocket. And we've talked about it before, but just from an air yards per pass, he's really playing at an exceptional level. And to me, he's clearly the best player in the league right now.
And Mike, one of the things that we didn't one of the things that we didn't mention about Russell Wilson in comparison to Aaron Rodgers and Josh Allen, the offensive line that he has to work with versus the offensive line in Green Bay and Buffalo, I don't think it's any comparison. Those other two offensive lines are better by leaps and bounds. So Russell Wilson, I mean, just from his mobility in the pocket, his ability to escape the pocket, buy time for his receivers to separate downfield. I mean, he's just – I don't think that there's anybody playing the quarterback position better right now, including Pat Mahomes, Aaron Rodgers, and Josh Allen.
Well, yeah, it's interesting. You go look, two things that stick out about Russell Wilson to me. Yards per attempt leads the NFL 9.38. Completion percentage, 75%, leads the NFL. So he's throwing the ball further and more accurate than anybody else. You put those two things together, that's really hard to beat. And that leads to everything else that's doing well, third down conversions, red zone, and everything else. So I think Russell Wilson is clearly the MVP as well.
Which, by the way, those odds, guys, Russell Wilson, you could get to win MVP right now at plus 175, and Aaron Rodgers, you can get to win the MVP right now at plus 300. Last top storyline I want to touch on with you guys, and that is looking back to Thursday night. The Tampa Bay Bucs lose to the Chicago Bears 20-19. And let's start with Tom Brady. Man, frustrated, yelling and screaming at his offensive line on the sideline, and then forgetting, or not even forgetting, but not realizing that it was fourth down. Kay Pena, how embarrassing. Walks off, doesn't even shake, Nick Foles' hand, which, I don't know. I'm not going to sit here and criticize him for that. I'd probably be just as frustrated and couldn't wait to get into the locker room myself. But, Mike, let's start with you. Listen, Tom isn't in Kansas anymore. He decided to leave the Patriots to go to Tampa Bay. Yeah, it was more attractive in regard to the talent that's on that squad, but lack of discipline, it's a whole nother organizational culture that exists over there in Tampa than in New England. And I think this past Thursday was a rude awakening for Tom Brady. Agree or disagree?
No, that's a good point. Absolutely. For Tom, like, he does not believe in, self-inflicted wounds, and, New England never beat themselves, and that was one of the many reasons they were so good for so long. Now, with that said, I think he likes a lot of what's going on down there, but one player in particular, Ryan Jensen. Ryan Jensen was an undrafted free agent with the Ravens a number of years ago.
Big Red. Yeah, I know that's Big Red well.
yep. Colorado State, Pueblo, of all places. He is one of those guys, some players play to the whistle, he plays through the whistle. And I think he was really upset that he got a 15-yard penalty, because I think you're making a great point there, Anita, about just how what he's used to. And I think that's where he's frustrated, which is, look, it's hard enough to win games, but when we do things that give another team a free 15 yards, that's unacceptable.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. The penalties are one thing, but also the turnover. I thought the second half turnover where Keyshawn Vaughn fumbles the ball on a check down and puts the Bears in point blank range, that's something that can't happen. At the end of the first half, actually. That's something that can't happen. That's giving away points right there. And then the roughing the passer on Shaq Barrett, I didn't think that was a very good call, but again, that was the play that really kept the go-ahead drive for the Bears going late in that ball game. Those are two plays that if the Tampa Bay Buccaneers have back, I believe they win that game on Thursday night. And for a player like Tom Brady that understands, you know, that there's not a huge margin for error with any of these games in the National Football League. I think when he sees those things, he gets frustrated. So, yeah, Tom Brady's got to know that that's fourth down, not third down. But there are other breaks in that game that didn't necessarily go their way. And I felt like those were things that were controllable from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers' standpoint. So I just think that this is a young football team that's got to learn how to win consistently, do the little things right in order to have the kind of success that they're looking for. But I still look at the Bucs as the team that's going to win the NFC South.
I was just going to add, that's my next question to you guys. My money is on the Saints. I think the Saints win it. I think this is just the start of something. I mean, Mike Evans didn't look like himself. I'm sure they're hoping they get Godwin back next week. A lot of injuries on that team. Defensively, they've been impressive, but you're talking about a defense that, that you know, really allowed Nick Foles and David Montgomery to put up some points on them. So my money's on the Saints. Chris, you said your money is on the Bucks. Mike, where are you? Who wins the NFC South?
Anita, can you spell Pinot Noir?
Hey! Here we go.
Really?
I mean,
really? Are we already?
Are we watching the same Drew Brees? I mean, I'm just curious. Like, doesn't quarterback play mean something?
Yeah, just wait till he gets Michael. The big thing with Drew Brees right now is Michael Thomas. Michael Thomas not there. He's not stretching the field. So all those, the dink and dunk and all that short passing game with Alvin Kamara is not working. But they're Thomas back this week. And so
Does Michael Thomas make Drew Brees younger?
I think so.
Wow. That's interesting. I didn't take that biology class. I didn't realize that Michael Thomas had reverse aging. That's a big statement. So we'll see. My concern, Anita, is Drew Brees. I look at some of these older quarterbacks. Drew Brees, I saw it firsthand in my career with Vinny Testaverde and Jay Cutler and Brett Favre. But you look at Brees and Roethlisberger, I just don't think they're the same. And I think Michael Thomas is a great player, but Drew Brees just looks like a diminished player to me. If we looked at it objectively and took the name off the back of the jersey, we'd be talking about a height and speed deficient quarterback who was just average. And I think they have an average quarterback, and I don't think the Saints win that division.
I couldn't agree more with you, Mr. T. And if you look at the Saints' playoff exit the last couple of years, it's been because of Drew Brees' turnovers. And so I think the grind of the regular season, when it comes to older players, it wears on you a little bit more. Now, keep in mind, last year, Drew Brees had a month and a half break when Teddy Bridgewater stepped in because Drew Brees was out with an injury. So he had a chance to get some more juice back in his legs, but he's probably not going to have that situation. He's not going to have that dynamic this year. And I just wonder how much will be left for Drew Brees as we get to the end of the regular season. Conversely, I think the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, as the season goes on, they're only going to get better. Tom Brady's only going to get more reps with that group of guys that he has to work with. And that defense that's orchestrated by Todd Bowles, which was, you know, showed growth in the second half of last year, they're only going to continue to improve. So, again, I think these two teams are going in different directions, which is why I like the Bucs, because they're not as good as they're going to be once we get to Week 17.
Do you know
All right, gentlemen.
Anita, can I make one last point, please? Drew Brees has only completed three passes when the ball has been in the air for over 20 yards through 25% of the season. And I just think at some point that catches up with you.
Now back to New York Game Day with Chris Canty, Mike Tannenbaum, and Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN. I can't be running around that open strip. Now back to New York Game Day with Chris Canty, Mike Tannenbaum, and Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Welcome back. Hour three, and this is Football Talk Chalk, brought to you by F.W. Webb and Weil McLean. Without further ado, Rich Simini, who covers the Jets, joins us here on 98.7 ESPN. Rich, welcome in. Good morning. I guess the first question is, no Sam Darnold, Joe Flacco. Realistically, what can Jets fans expect from him this afternoon?
Well, good morning, guys. Thanks for having me. I would say this is going to be an extremely difficult spot for Joe, simply because he has not practiced a lot of football. We know it's his first start in just about one calendar year, and he really didn't start practicing until this week. You know, he missed training camp because he was recovering from neck surgery. And I thought he had a really telling comment the other day when we were talking to him. He said the four plays he went in last week in the Denver game were actually the first four plays he's ever heard in his ear from Adam Gase calling in plays from the sidelines. So that's where they are right now with Joe Flacco. This is going to be like his first preseason game. And I fear behind that offensive line that his lack of mobility will really show up today.
Rich, I want to give you props on that flattering article that you and Jordan Renan came up with on the local football teams. Obviously, you can hear the sarcasm in my voice. One of the things that you pointed out, which is the point differential for the Jets at minus 66, which is, as you put it, easily the worst in the league. You wouldn't expect that from a head coach who's, according to the owner, an offensive genius. What are we going to see in terms of the Jets being able to get back on track with this offense and start putting up some points in meaningful minutes throughout the game?
Yeah, in fact, when you refer to the point differential being minus 66, we also have to note that they've played a backup quarterback in six out of the 16 quarters that they've played. So that makes it even more glaring, that point differential, that they've been playing backup. In one case, last week, a third-string quarterback. So anyway, I just wanted to throw that in there. The Jets just need to survive the first quarter, Chris, you know, because they've given up calamitous-type plays early in these games. There was the pick six by Darnold in Indianapolis against the 49ers. There was the Mostert 80-yard run on the first play of the game. It seems like every week something bad happens really early. And, you know, when losing teams fall behind early, you know, it's just – you know, I don't want to say guys quit, but they just become demoralized. And so they need to just survive the first quarter today.
Rich, speaking of surviving the first quarter, given that potent offense of Arizona, how do you think the secondary for the Jets is going to sort out given, you know, the injuries they have?
Well, I mean, you know, I think the starters will be back today. I think they're going to go with Pierre Desir, you know, who had one of the craziest games you'll ever see against Denver. I mean, he got torched up and down the field, but he also had two picks, one for a pick six. And I think Bless Austin will be starting today. He's listed as questionable. He has been practicing, so I do anticipate him to start. And you have your two regular safeties. So this is their starting secondary. Now, you can say what you want about it, but it is their starting secondary. I don't know how they're going to cover Hopkins today, Mike. I mean, this guy gets... You probably have the numbers. How many targets a game is he averaging? Like 15 targets
a
game?
He has 39. Just really quick, Rich. He's got 39 receptions on the season, leads the NFL.
Yeah, I know. If he has nine today, it'll be the most receptions through five games in NFL history for a player. And I just don't know how the Jets are going to cover him. I mean, they're playing a lot of zone now because they don't trust their corners. And so I think they're going to get picked apart by Murray and Hopkins.
And I wanted to dive a little further into the X's and O's of this matchup, Rich. I know this is a very unique offense that the Cardinals are bringing to town. It's an air raid offense, but they do run the football. But the philosophy is to spread the opposing defenses out in order to create space for their playmakers one-on-one. I just look at how they run that no-huddle, up-tempo offense with a lot of RPOs. What is Greg Williams and the guys on the defensive side of the ball saying about how they're going to try to neutralize what the Cardinals are trying to do to them on offense?
Well, I mean, because they're running so many plays and so quick, I think it limits the defense's ability to change plays at the line of scrimmage. You know, and with Greg's defense, it's so multiple that they rely on that. They try to change things up and disguise coverages and disguise fronts. And when the other team is moving at that quick a tempo, it makes it hard to do that. So I think it takes them out of their comfort zone a little bit. And so I'm sure they've been working on that. He likes to also roll in a lot of players. They do a lot of rotating. That'll be a little more difficult if the Cardinals are in an up-tempo mode. The Jets have struggled against some up-tempo teams. Buffalo did it in the first game. They came out in sub-up-tempo. And so, again, another big challenge, you know, for the Jets today.
Again, Rich Cimini is joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. Rich, when I do radio show interviews across the country, one of the biggest questions I'm asked is the security of Adam Gase's job. And I really don't know how to respond because I don't know the relationship between Adam Gase and Joe Douglas, Joe D. I mean, you know, there was a lot of speculation that the reason McCagnan is gone because of Adam Gase, and therefore there's a lot of speculation the reason Joe D is here because of Adam Gase. Is that relationship save Adam Gase's job moving forward? If you can kind of explain this dynamic and what you anticipate happening moving forward.
Well, Adam and Joe get along well. From everybody I've talked to in different camps, they get along well. In fact, Adam, I think Jet fans know that Adam really lobbied for Joe to get the job in 2019. In fact, Adam actually drove to South Jersey to Joe's house outside Philadelphia to basically beg him to take the job, and he did. And I do think they get along. However, ultimately, it's not Joe's decision to determine, you know, Adam's fate. I mean, it's really a Christopher Johnson's call. Now, would he seek input from Joe? You know, I'm sure he would, but it's really Christopher's call. I think he still wants to give Adam a chance. Now that he's getting some guys back, you know, he gets Le'Veon Bell back today. I think Perryman will be back next week. I think Mims, well, who knows with Mims? That's just like an ongoing mystery. But, you know, he's starting to get his guys back on offense, and I think Christopher saw what happened last year. The team was 0-4, and they ended up finishing 7-9. I think he's hoping that Adam can have the same type of turnaround. So I really think Adam, nothing's going to happen with him. They're bye weeks in week 10 or 11, I think. So I think he'd probably be safe through then and probably through the season, I think, unless things just get really, really ugly.
Rich, you just touched on Le'Veon Bell is slated to return. What can we expect from him in this game? Is he going to be on any kind of a pitch count?
Yeah, I do think he will be, simply because he's coming off the injury, the hamstring, an injury I think the Jets contributed to by putting him back in that Buffalo game. Adam Gase admitted, you know, he shouldn't have done that. And so, and Gore has been such a big part of the offense the last couple of weeks that I don't, and we know Adam's affinity for Frank Gore, so I don't think he's just going to put Gore out to pasture. I think he'll try to create some sort of rotation today. And they need better blocking on third down. I mean, you saw it last week in Denver. Kalen Ballage was awful. He gave up two sacks, and he ended up getting cut. So I'm curious to see who the third down back will be today. It has to be someone who can protect the passer.
Hey, Rich, just going back to Coach Gase's job security, obviously we don't know what's going to happen with the upcoming presidential election, but if Joe Biden wins and Woody Johnson is no longer the ambassador to England, how do you – see that impact in terms of the organizational dynamics?
That's a really good question, Mike. I think there's a chance, even if Trump does win, that Woody would come back. Based on, I've done a lot of thorough research into State Department activity the last few months, and it looks like the ambassadors to London pretty much only stay on 3-year terms, even if the president, you know, wins again. So I think there's a pretty good chance he's going to be back with the team in either, you know, December or January. And so I was talking to someone, you know, fairly close to the situation who thinks that things could really change when Woody comes back. It's such a wild card. I mean, Christopher's been running the team. Obviously, it hasn't been going well because they have one of the worst records in the league under Christopher's, you know, leadership. And when Woody comes back, if this doesn't get turned around, I could see Woody firing the coaching staff and probably keeping Joe Douglas because he got a 6-year contract and starting it over again with a GM and a clean slate.
Rich, going back to that Thursday night game against the Denver Broncos, Sam Darnold gets slammed to the turf in the first quarter, separates his shoulder. They let him come back in that game, but after the game and the days later evaluating his shoulder, they determined that he's not healthy enough to play 10 days later. Organizationally, how can they justify the decision to let Sam go back into that game against the Broncos on Thursday night?
Yeah, that's a totally fair question, Chris. And I talked to two doctors not connected, two sports medicine guys not connected with the team, and they both did not criticize the Jets. So what happened was they diagnosed it in the locker room. They took an X-ray and they determined, you know, it was a sprained shoulder, which is, like you said, basically a separation. And I'm virtually sure they gave him a pain-killing shot and put him back in the game. So that's why he was able to finish that game. And he actually threw a 50-yard pass. And everyone's wondering, wow, how did he do that? Well, it's, you know, he had a painkiller. And So you can't give a player painkillers every day during the week to practice. So I think that's why he's not playing this
week. I don't know about that, Rich.
Well, they didn't want to do that with the quarterback's right arm. I mean,
There you go.
It's the most valuable. Now, do guys do it, you know, like for a leg or something? Offensive lineman? Yeah.
Yeah, defensive lineman, they don't care about those guys, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure you never took one during the week, right, Chris? But, exactly. I mean, it's the most important limb on the team is the quarterback's right arm. And the way it was explained to me is that if he wasn't practicing on Wednesday, they weren't going to start him because he's still a relatively inexperienced quarterback. He needs the reps. He needs to see things happen in practice to take it to the game. And if he wasn't going to be able to get all the reps in practice, they didn't want him playing. So I think that is the explanation on why that Sam is out after going back in the game last week.
Interesting. Rich, thank you so much for spending time with us this morning. Very insightful stuff. Appreciate you. Enjoy the game this afternoon.
Thanks so much, guys. Take care.